So our reading this morning is from Exodus chapter 1, verses 8 to 14, and it's titled, The Israelites Oppressed. Then a new king who did not know about Joseph came to power in Egypt. Look, he said to his people, the Israelites have become much too numerous for us. Come, we must deal shrewdly with them, or they will become even more numerous. And if war breaks out, we'll join our enemies, fight against us, and leave the country. So they put slave masters over them to oppress them with forced labor, and they built Pithom and Ramesses as store cities for Pharaoh. But the more they were oppressed, the more they multiplied and spread. So the Egyptians came to dread the Israelites and worked them ruthlessly. They made their lives bitter with hard labor in brick and mortar and with all kinds of work in the fields. In all their hard labor, the Egyptians used them ruthlessly.
Our lives are built around relationships. In the beginning, as infants, our focus is limited to prime caregivers. For most of us, that's our parents. Very quickly, that expands to other toddlers. Somehow we recognise them as being kindred folk. And our relationships continue to grow as we progress through life. Relationships come and go. They get lost and rekindled. Maybe you go off to college and university and you meet exciting new people and friends, and you forget about those who are friends at school. Some relationships are really good. Most are probably okay. And some are dreadful. And maybe they start off exciting and full of promise. Then at some point, they change. In this biblical story, the relationship between the Egyptians and the Israelites began when Joseph interpreted the Pharaoh's dreams. Consequently, the Israelites were invited to live in Egypt, and both the Egyptians and the Israelites prospered. And it might have been as much as 300 years later when a new ruler, who had little knowledge of history, allowed his fears to sour the relationship. He enslaved the Israelites. This is the moment in which that relationship changed. Now, I'm guessing that we've all had relationships. We've all experienced something like this in our past. Well, maybe not as slaves, but the deterioration of relationships. We might work to resolve the difficulties, or perhaps the relationship just falls by the wayside. Occasionally, though, we might find that it's not so easy to walk away, and we find ourselves captive, like the Israelites. We all have strengths and weaknesses. In our world, we call them gifts. And businesses employ people with complementary skill sets. For example, where I work, there's the business owner. He largely steers the ship. There's a team of instructors. Someone does the accounts, and a team of sales and marketing people. But sometimes complementary skill sets become a problem, particularly in one-to-one relationships. Maybe two people are highly attracted to each other because they have complementary skill sets. By joining together, they become an entire thing. It's called a codependent relationship or a hooked relationship. And you might think this is good, and it can be. But what happens when one person decides to improve his skills and learns some of the other person's skills and is no longer dependent on the other? The other feels redundant. And fear and mistrust creep in. Fear that the person will now leave. And in fear, they start to do things that prevent the other person from leaving. And we see something a little bit like this in this story. The Israelites are very much needed, but feared, so they are made captive. Sometimes relationships are not with people, but with substances. I'm thinking drugs. It may start as a bit of teenage fun, but for some, the drug takes a hold. It doesn't allow the user to escape. The person becomes trapped, addicted. A person close to me recently confessed that they were addicted to cocaine and had been for about 4 years. I didn't see this personally as frequently as I used to do, so while I was aware that their life was rather chaotic, I was still shocked by this news. Even worse, the person had hidden it until it was on the verge of becoming homeless, when it was no longer possible to hide it. I started to communicate with this person daily just to give them something to just discuss, someone to discuss it with. And it might seem strange, but I resorted to Exodus to try to understand the situation. And in reverse, developed a different understanding of Exodus. Before moving on, I must acknowledge there are many forms of addiction. Drugs, alcohol, and gambling are the big three that grab attention, but there are plenty of other forms of destructive compulsive behaviors, such as shopping, sex, internet affairs, video games, plastic surgery maybe, food, work, etc. People become enslaved to their addiction. So just to get back to the story, the relationship between the king and the Israelites has soured. The king has enslaved them. What do they do about it? Well, they moan, work harder, but they don't think about how they might escape. And it's the same with addicts. The person I mentioned earlier told me, it just takes over your life. That's kind of become enslaved. There's a dreadful cycle, which he called the grind. Feeling low and in need of a pick-me-up. The pick-me-ups takes you higher to some place that can be achieved in normal life, followed then by a woo deep down low that needs a pick-me-up, and so it goes on. You might begin a session in the evening and pass through several cycles through the night. And by 5 o'clock in the morning, you've run out of stuff and you're absolutely drained. So you fall asleep, miss a day's work. Excuse me a moment. The financial and emotional costs are huge. It empties your bank account. It wrecks lives and it wrecks families. And there is so much shame around it. Shame of wrecking your life. Shame of wrecking other people's lives. Shame of wrecking your family. Shame of letting people down. Shame of owing money and not paying back. Shame of theft. And so it goes on. And all of these things, they lead to despair. You can see no way out. Similarly, the Israelites were in a grind of enslavement. The king was not satisfied with making them work harder. In fact, he made it virtually impossible for them to complete their targets. Additionally, he sought other means to debase them, such as killing the newborn sons. They could see no way out. They had reached a state of despair. It normally takes an external agent to break this grinding cycle. And I find it interesting that in chapter 2, this is Exodus chapter 2, verse 23, we learn that God heard their moaning. It says, many years later, yes, many years later, the Israelites had been enslaved for a long time, but the king of Egypt died. The Israelites groaned under their slavery and cried out. And I take this as they cried out to God. And it says God listened to their groanings. The interesting thing is earlier in the chapter, God had created Moses and prepared Moses for the best education and leadership training that was possible at the time. This suggests to me that God was aware of the Israelites' situation before they cried out to him. In this case, God had acted years before the Israelites moaned to him. And I wonder, do we wait too long before we cry out? Do we wait until we're desperate? For an addict, the first step towards recovery is admitting that there is a problem. And it can be a difficult and humbling experience, but it is essential for moving forward. In the same way, the Israelites had to acknowledge that they were slaves in Egypt and that they needed help to escape to freedom. So we just saw how God worked in advance with the preparation of Moses. Now, towards the end of my RAF career, I trained to be a counsellor, a four-year course. And in truth, I didn't do much with it. I worked in a couple of youth counselling ages for a few years as a voluntary worker, but remained employed in aviation. And then when we went to the Emirates, it all got lost and forgotten about. The rub here, though, is that if I hadn't done that course all those years before, I would not have been able to talk to this person I'm talking about. And I mean talk in the right way. And as I stand here, I'm just questioning, was I being prepared to help this person? And for you, if you look back on your lives, have there been occasions when you've done something or something has occurred and afterwards you think, wow, isn't it a good job I did so-and-so all those years ago? Otherwise, I wouldn't have been able to do this. And it raises a question, doesn't it? Does God work in our lives without us being aware of it? If we return to this story, we learn that getting Israelites to the point of making a break was a major challenge. More so is that even getting Moses to the point of going to the Pharaoh was a major effort on God's behalf. In chapters 3 and 4, we read of Moses tending the flocks and having a series of conversations with God. God tasks him with approaching the Pharaoh, but Moses lacks self-confidence. In verse 11 it says, Moses answered God, but why me? What makes you think that I could ever go to the Pharaoh and lead the children of Israel out of Egypt? I'll be with you, said God. And this will be the proof that I am the one who sent you. Moses took some convincing. Indeed, even Moses, you know, one of the greatest people of the Old Testament, had trouble trusting God. He had trouble trusting that with God's help, he would accomplish the task set to him. Eventually, he did. I find it heartwarming that Moses struggled, because too often in life, I think, it's up to me. I'm on my own here. And actually, I'm not. Once convinced, we see Moses talking to the king and seeking permission for the people to go into the desert to pray. He's rebuffed by the king. And we read of the series of the 10 plagues. The king will not allow the Israelites into the desert. At times he agrees, then he reneges on the deal. The threats, the reneging, and the actuality of the plague steadily just get worse until eventually the king agrees. But the agreement is for the Israelites to go into the desert only. This back and forth between Moses and the Israelites and the king may represent the internal turmoil of an addict. We often say, don't we? Oh, one part of me is saying, go for it. And the other part is saying, no, no, just be a bit cautious. And likewise then, we may view the Israelites, Moses, stroke God, and the king as individual parts of our personality. One part of the personality is in agony, desperate for this chaotic situation to come to an end. Another part is urging the person to quit and leave the drug behind. And yet another part, perhaps a fearful part, is worried about how they will survive without the drug. And this is an enormous tussle for an individual to deal with. And it may take quite some time, as is mirrored in the Bible. Now, excuse me. The person I'm referring to had already been struggling for a couple of years before my involvement. He didn't actually involve me until he was at rock bottom. He had nowhere to go. A few weeks later, he found a deeper rock bottom. And then a few weeks later, a further deeper rock bottom. But the final one that I know of, was the critical one. This was the one where he was ready for change. He reached a point where he believed it was possible, and he started to see that there was a future. I think also there's a possibility that the fear of the consequences of not doing something became greater than the fear of actually doing it. You know, just as the Pharaoh, whose fear of more devastating plagues became greater, I think, than the fear of letting the Israelites go. And so back to the story then, the Israelites make a run for it. The Red Sea parts and closes behind them, sealing off their return. There's no going back. And I think this is where the addict story and the biblical story part company for a while. The addicts can easily return to it. There's no closing of the Red Sea for them. And having made a break, the Israelites enter this period of wilderness. God doesn't set them on a direct journey to the promised land. He understands that the Israelites need to reset their way of living and that it would take some time. Without all that slave work to do, their lives would be empty. And it needed to be filled with good things. They were given laws, shown how to live wholesome lives, faced challenges to give them confidence. Nevertheless, we must acknowledge there were occasions of backsliding. It wasn't a continuous progression. Sometimes it was two steps forward and one back. And the same issues apply to addicts. Without the drug, life suddenly feels empty. They even miss the chaos. And one of the most challenging things for addicts, of course, is the temptation to relapse. How do we fill this void? How do we prevent them from backsliding? For this person that I've been talking about, he is homeless. He's currently living in a tent in a wood, a wilderness. He has the owner's permission, by the way. But he has, and he did this as a deliberate thing to escape, but he has escaped the situation that he was in. He's escaped the locality and some of the people that he was around. He's left Egypt. As far as I'm aware, he has not used cocaine for over 3 months with one very brief blip. He's finding pleasure in nature, cooking on a fire, having to invent things to make things, camp life work for him. And he's busy earning money to pay off his debts. His grandiose life expectations are humbled, and he is now beginning to enjoy simple things. Most importantly for me, the despair has evaporated. He can see a future, but this time it's a realistic future. By no means is he cured. Currently, like the Israelites, he has just entered the wilderness and he's got a long, challenging journey ahead of him. But he and I are hopeful. He's not a Christian, but none of this would have happened without God's input. I have been both enlightened and humbled by the recognition of how God works in our lives, sometimes unnoticed. And so, just to finish off, I believe the story of Exodus offers a good working metaphor for the journey towards recovery from addiction. And by acknowledging the problem and staying focused and having faith, an addict can escape the bondage of addiction to begin a new life of freedom. Just as the Israelites found their way out of slavery and into the promised land, an addict can find their way out of darkness into light.